boy. Oh boy. Oh boy, oh boy. Today is going to be an interesting one, boys and girls. It's going to be an interesting one. We've got a big show in store for you. We've got a bunch of different stuff. Some fancy technology. See, you got multiple cameras going. Oh, that's the wrong screen. We're going to talk about news. We're going to talk about trucking. We're going to talk about freight brokering and schools and teaching and education. And we're going to talk about all sorts of fun stuff. If you don't know who I am, well, I'm Steve. Super happy to be here. I host this little show called Freight Broker Live. And let me try to find my intro song right here. Freight broker. Freight broker. Freight broker. That's not what I'm again. Oh boy. Today is February 3rd, 2020. It is 2:01 on the East Coast. 1 o'clock Central Time. Different times all over the place. Who would have thought that? Well, I'm just going to can the music right now because I've got some news, some fun stuff, all sorts of fun stuff. Let me get back to the screen. Arnando on Facebook said, thank you for doing this, Steve. No problem. This is what I live to do and love to do. So if anyone has never watched my show before, I host this little show called Freight Broker Live. And it's an online news channel show, blah, blah, blog / news organization. I try to report on things that are current and things that are important and things that aren't necessarily getting picked up elsewhere. I can't really see my screen, so I just had to minimize that. So, yeah, as people on YouTube are saying, if you watch the videos, which you can see live on YouTube and Facebook and Periscope and Twitter and soon the Roku app, ignore that, you know, whatever. But I kind of moved around my screen a little bit and screwed around with everything. But the lighting is going to keep doing that until I can figure something out. But for now, I have to do that. But at any rate, look, I don't even know what camera to look at. Let me put it back over there. There you go. But getting a little bit more professional. Not really. It's just using multiple webcams that I already had anyway. Anyway, so if you don't know who I am, my name is Steve. I've already said this, but whatever. You're going to learn a lot today. I talk about news. I'm heavily opinionated. And although I am a freight broker, I kind of have a different perspective on the industry than most freight brokers. And I tend to voice them in my show. See, I can make it all fancy, but I can't control the internet. All right. Anyway, so I should be back now. But like I was saying before I so rudely interrupted myself, if you look up there, you can see that this episode is sponsored by the one, the only, Insurance Unlimited. Now, you may say, who is Insurance Unlimited? Well, they are your number one referred total logistics insurance company. They specialize in commercial auto liability, cargo, umbrellas, general liability, brokers, contingent liability, media liability, because this guy needs it, professional liability, garage keepers, and so much more. The mission of Insurance Unlimited is to serve individuals, families, businesses with total insurance coverage for all your insurance needs. They strive to represent quality insurance companies with quality products and have strong financial backing security. and with a history of success. You literally know that they're awesome because every single day someone asks about insurance, and Brittany Smith, who is the main rep that we deal with here, she is quick to jump on and give answers. She's quick to get referred by other people because she is just truly one of the better insurance agents I've had the privilege of dealing with. With that said, so I thank you, Brittany, for sponsoring this. And everyone can see on the main page, freightbrokerlive.com, you'll see her contact information there with a banner to her website. Feel free to reach out to her. She is, just like me, brutally honest. Sometimes she may not be able to help you, but she's going to do her damnedest to help. All right, so let me switch over to this fancy screen here. So our first news story today is one I just wrote about like an hour ago. So Toledo-based Bolt Express has acquired Premium Transportation Logistics, another Toledo-based expedited service provider. Bolt Express, founded in 2001, has 410 power units and 510 drivers, according to FMCSA's database. It is a time-critical delivery service provider with an expedited and full truckload capabilities. With the addition of PTL's 50 units and 53 drivers, Bolt looks to continue its quest to 1,000 trucks. Bolt, a couple of years ago, was in the Journal of Commerce saying that they're rapidly expanding and they're trying to do it. They've been on the Inc. 5000 list for several years as one of the fastest growing companies. I think they have revenues of over $100 million. So they're pretty decent sized company. And anyone that's ever been on the road, you see these vans sitting in parking lots waiting for their next expedited load, along with Panther Expedited and all sorts of other companies. Anyway, so anyone know what this bridge is? Could pause for a minute, but if you read my story, you do. On January 31st, Mayor de Blasio, presidential hopeful, I guess, or non-presidential hopeful, whatever. He's out. Doesn't matter. Anyway, he signed an executive order number 51, which instructs the New York Police Department, i.e. NYPD, to step up enforcement on overweight big rigs along the BQE beginning today, Monday. And if you guys watched my show last week, remember I talked about this little trade organization run by this guy that runs a UCR filing company, blah, blah, blah. Well, they're super outgoing and focusing on things that don't matter in trucking. Well, they are warning the New York City Mayor de Blasio's blatantly unfair executive order to crack down on overweight trucks along the BQE could lead to catastrophic consequences. The Small Business and Transportation Coalition president, James Lamb, issued a scathing rebuke of what he describes as de Blasio's egregious political use of trucks as a scapegoat to deflect from government's failure to properly maintain infrastructure within the city. All right, so let me give a little bit of background because I know you guys are probably like, what the hell is this guy talking about? So let me tell you. Which way to look? I don't care. Let me put it on this one. There. So, if anyone doesn't know, trucks haven't been allowed on the BQE over 80,000 pounds pretty much ever. They don't issue permits for them. The problem that the city faced is that these trucks are basically running illegal because there's no scale houses or anything like that. So these trucks are running illegal, going overweight, running on these roads. And I mean, they're using technology to say that some of the trucks are up to 170,000 pounds, which I don't know. But a lot of these trucks are running heavy and they're not getting caught, and it's caused undue wear and tear on the road. So, of course, de Blasio decides to basically say, hey, listen, for all you rule breakers that keep breaking rules, we're going to hit you with a $7,000 fine if you get caught going over the road. Now, you may say, well, just do what you're supposed to do, right? Because I know a lot of people think that. Hey, just do what you're supposed to do. But not the SBTC. So they went on. They said more crazy stuff. Lamb says the SBTC is not calling for a boycott. But if one transpires, it could lead to a mass panic among residents and eventually to the city's complete and utter devastation. This is a press release. Guys, God damn it. I'm getting bit by something, I think. I was outside before. We got fire ants all over my yard. I was spraying poison on them. Anyway, If one transpires, it could lead to mass panic among residents and eventually to the city's complete and utter devastation. Even if only a small minority of truckers choose to boycott the city, Lamb asserts, transportation costs could rise significantly as a matter of supply and demand, and such costs would ultimately be passed on to New York City's consumers, many of which already struggle to pay high rents, mortgages, and real estate taxes. So, I mean, what do you say? If you guys don't know about this guy, James Lamb, the president of the SBTC, again, he's got a great platform. I just wish he would be able to use it constructively. Writing a letter to a mayor who's enforcing something that is, it's already a law. isn't using your platform in a wise way, especially when you could tell he wrote the letter to the mayor. Or maybe he just needs a better spokesperson. I understand it. There's a lot of roads. Trucks can't go on. Hell, nobody likes going to New York City anyway. I lived right outside of New York City, and I charge a surcharge just going to the city because it sucks. Traffic sucks. Everything sucks. But whatever. I just think it's funny that he says he's not trying to cause mass panic, and yet he says, well, here's a drastic example. And then he was posting pictures of when I think it was Hurricane Sandy or Irene or something flooded out the airport. And so he was posting pictures on that truckers.com group saying, this is what it would look like without trucks. Flood, you know, muddy airports, I guess. I don't get that one, but whatever. It is what it is. Here's another story that we've talked about a bunch too. The coronavirus. So hold on, let me get back to the screen. Let me put it on this one and... oh, God, it resets every time. So the coronavirus. Here's my little picture for the coronavirus. So we all know what's going on with this. With the coronavirus sweeping through major manufacturing hubs in China, the government has mandated shutdowns in many cities. I think it's up to 210 people who have died. In the Philippines, I believe yesterday just had their first death attributed to the virus. The mandatory evacuation and closure of many businesses and schools in the area has shut down a number of manufacturing facilities and distributors located in China. In addition, many companies based in the United States and elsewhere are suspending or limiting their operations in China, which, of course, if this continues to go on, we will have mass panic and port activity is going to drop and trucks are going to have a hard time and freight's going to go. It's just kind of like the tariffs, except now there's a flu. So the good thing is Lysol, if you guys have seen that circling around online, Lysol apparently kills this coronavirus. But it's not a laughing matter. It's a in fact, it's killed 210 people, I believe, at last count. There's a handful of cases here in the United States. I believe there's a cruise ship with 7,000 people that's not being allowed to port. Because of suspected virus on board, there's a number of Americans, several hundred Americans that have landed or that have were flown out of China that are here in the United States and are under a mandatory 14-day quarantine. So it's a big deal. You know, luckily it happened in the Chinese New Year, so there's not going to be an immediate effect to it. But I'm curious to see if this keeps going on and keeps spreading and keeps being a huge problem. Like it looks like it's going to be. It's going to be, it's crazy. France said, no, 361 people have died already in China, more than SARS. Wow, I didn't know it was that many. Like I said, I'm not making light of it. I just think it's going to be crazy. It's going to affect freight. That's what I was just saying, Mike. Eventually it's going to start with the ports and the NVOCCs. So the good thing is we're going to be able to see it. We're going to see the shipping volume decreases coming into the United States. There's a bunch of technology that you could see, inbound shipping volume. We're going to see it. And then the drayage, you know, port guys, even though the LA port is struggling anyway, it's in the New York and New Jersey ports have exceeded expectations. And for the first time they've passed the receiving volume of the LA ports. But I mean, we're going to feel it eventually. I just don't know when, I guess is the easiest way to say that. But And then here's going to be my talking point. I know you guys can't really see this on your screen, so I'm going to go ahead and read it for you. I'll do it in a second. So, what do you guys think of the Super Bowl? It sucked. I mean, it was good if you were a KC fan. And I was rooting for KC just because I didn't want San Fran to win. But it was a good game. It was tight and it was close and everything. And then apparently everyone acted all crazy afterwards in terms of what I saw in the news for KC. I let my son stay up. And of course, he chose to root against me the entire time. So every time San Francisco was doing something good, he was like, yay. And every time they did something bad, he was like, oh. But I don't really care. What I want to talk about is Mr. Tom Brady. Why would he make that commercial? That was super offending, and I was not really into it at all. I have to say, Tom Brady, glad to hear you're going to be back, but don't do that kind of crap anymore, in my opinion. And then Mike Timmy on Facebook said Shakira is the real MVP. I know. She is, right? You know what's funny is I saw a lot. There's so many memes going around already. My wife is a teacher, as you guys know, because I talk about it quite often. She during the Super Bowl, right after the halftime thing, she gets on the forum and she's reading all the other teachers and they're complaining about their performance and how come kids have to be subjected to that and everything. And there's all these memes going around about basically the same thing, because you have Adam Levine a couple of years ago, or whenever he was in the Super Bowl. I don't pay attention to that half crap stuff or the halftime stuff. I don't care. Unless they got a metal band playing, it doesn't do me any good. But yeah, it was a good Super Bowl, good show. I didn't realize the little girl that sang was J-Lo's daughter, which she's very talented for a young kid. But again, J-Lo was too, so what can you expect by that? Okay, enough football, because this isn't a football talk show. So let me put this back. Oh, God. Let me scroll to this. You know what? I got a better one for you guys. Hold on. I've got a better one. So this is a video that was recently posted online. Let me see if I can make this full screen so you guys can fully see this. So this is a video that was posted online. I forgot. His name was Joshua something. But he posted this online. He was in the bunk and his team driver was driving this truck. So if you guys have never seen this, I'm just going to let it play out for just a few minutes. Now, if you're, you know, a kid and you don't want to see this, and I'm sorry if you listen to the podcast, there's no, you'll hear the audio. This guy is driving in Wyoming on, what was it, Friday during the ice storm and the snowstorms, and he was involved in that 20-car pileup. And this video is pretty crazy, but let's see if we could point out what he did wrong here. Me, personally, I would have already been done driving at this point. You see how icy the road looks right there? You know, the trucks are driving too darn fast. You can hear his emergency blinkers going. Now again. And now the truck's slowing down. He sees something going on. And again, Josh, the guy who posted this, was sleeping in the back. But
Josh! It's crazy.
Is a gnarly video. I don't care who you are. Now, there's a couple of things that I want to point out. As someone that was involved in a major accident several years ago in Illinois or Indiana, I don't even remember where it was, but conditions exactly like that, I didn't stop. I didn't slow down either. So you know what I did? But I was fortunate my truck wasn't hit. But I'm driving my truck and trailer, and we're driving down the road, and I come up over a hill, and there's people driving like idiots, and there's ice and all that stuff just like that, except it was nighttime. Which is even worse, because there during the day, you could see the roads frozen. At night, you can only really see it if your headlights hit it perfect, and then you could tell it's glazed over, because otherwise it just looks like a wet road. That daytime video, you could clearly see that the road was quite frozen over. But he, you know, when I was driving, I came up over a hill. I've already told this story on air, so I don't need to do it too many more times. But I came up over a hill and encountered a load of stop traffic, and I laid on my brakes and it didn't do anything. And luckily I had brake controllers and all that stuff, so it kind of kept me going straight the entire way. I managed not to hit anybody and just stop. Another car came, you know, and slid next to me. And then we look in the back and here comes jackknife tractor trailers, and they ended up wiping everybody out except me, because I drove my truck into the woods. I had four-wheel drive, which I was already engaged anyway because I was hot-shotting, but I had four-wheel drive on the truck, so I slammed that sucker into the woods and went in between trees, and luckily, I only took out the passenger side mirror of my car. But yeah, that guy, they were injured, and I could skip to a little bit of the end where you could see. Again, there may be bad content and stuff like that, but I'll play it just a little bit more.
There's so many behind us, too.
They're involved. They're in it.
If you can, your shoulder. I don't know who's watching.
I mean, they're hurt. Like I said, that's graphic. Yeah. I'm not going to watch this stuff, so I'm going to turn this off. But Josh was that guy, the guy who was hurt, and he was injured. He was injured. And he posted the video, and then if you look on the YouTube comments, because if you do truck accident I-80 20 car pileup dash cam footage, you'll find that video online. That video is, it's a long video. It's 10 minutes, 11 minutes of video. You had the driver, who I'm assuming was wearing the seatbelt, but the guy who published the video online was sleeping in the truck. That's why you heard the driver yelling his name over and over and over. Let me see if I can get to, you heard him yelling his name right before impact, which I'll, right here. I mean, I don't want to keep showing it, but just in case people miss it. See, he's yelling, Josh.
Josh! Hold on! Hold on!
I mean, the one good thing, I guess, is that he woke up the driver, but the bad thing is they got in a massive accident. Really, to me, I mean, they shouldn't have been on the road. In Wyoming, I don't know if they had a truck ban going on, but if they didn't, they should have. I mean, you can't hold the town. It's just scary. Guys, drivers out there, be safe. This is a good thing for any broker out there who doesn't realize what a driver has to deal with. That exactly is what a driver has to deal with every day, you know? And every day, it happens every day. As someone that reads the news constantly, you know, that's all, pretty much all I do now is just read news. I am reading and seeing these accidents every single day. Drivers being killed because they can't, because of either driver error or four-wheelers who don't know how to drive, or road conditions, or anything. Most situations seem out of their control. There was just another truck in Colorado yesterday that apparently was making an exit, and they don't know if it was medical or what happened to the guy, but he apparently never slowed down. So he took an exit doing 65 miles an hour in a tractor trailer, and he ended up wiping out six different cars, went over an embankment and into a liquor store in Colorado. And the weather was clear, so it wasn't weather related. They have no idea what it was. Apparently the driver made it. He's injured, but there were eight people transported. One is still in critical condition in that accident. It literally happens all the time, all the time. Fran said, Wyoming is horrible to drive in the winter. I know. If you ask me, everywhere is horrible to drive in the winter. I am not a big fan of driving in the winter at all. At all. But that's a video that I believe every freight broker, everybody that doesn't necessarily have the time behind the wheel needs to watch that kind of video, because it's, you know, I'm not playing the whole thing because I don't want to get like flagged and all that stuff, but the video, it goes on for 10 minutes. And so it shows, you know, them right after the accident. It shows them gathering their stuff out of the truck. It shows the I don't know what the right word is, but the concern that whole crap, they're in the line of traffic now. What happens if other trucks don't stop in time? Because the road is a sheet of ice. So just keep that in mind, guys. If you're out there driving or you're a broker and you're wondering why your driver's taking too long and you're getting a little pissed off because the driver's not making your delivery on time and he's going through Wyoming or anywhere up north where there's snow, that's probably why he's not on time. So be a little compassionate, would you? All right. So that little thing that I was going to read, it was kind of my talking point for the day. It was going to be something that most brokers and carriers will face. It's something that we have to learn to deal with together. If anyone's watching this and you don't know, you know, my kind of take on things, I am a freight broker. I started off as a carrier and then got into the broker side of things just because I realized I could make money without having assets. It's kind of a no-brainer for me. But I miss trucking, and I consider myself a carrier-centric broker, meaning I focus a lot of what I do and a lot of these videos and a lot of the content that I produce is carrier-centric because I want more brokers to understand the mind of a driver, because then you'll be a much more effective broker, in my opinion. But this is my show, so my opinion matters. Anyway, on a group rate per mile masters, which some of you guys are on, I'm not going to talk about the people that are on it, but it's got a lot of good content most of the time. So someone wrote today, so and I'm going to read it just as it is, so bear with it, and then I'll discuss it. So our broker can hold us and threaten against our authority when they are in the wrong? ? This is unbelievable. That's how it starts off, too, by the way. The situation. I booked a load from Florida to Virginia. First mistake, because you're probably not getting paid good coming out of Florida. Anyway, the driver was loaded and left to scale 15 miles away. He was overweight. He called broker, no answer, left message, headed back to shipper. They were closed. He attempted again to contact broker, still no answer. He waited an hour at the shipper and then said, screw it. Left shipper. Broker finally calls 3 hours later, but he was already out of the area, so he didn't answer and kept moving. This morning at the receiver, they went through the bins and pick and chose what produce they wanted, then rejected the rest. Too small, I guess, is the reason why they rejected whatever produce it was. 4 hours after the appointment, broker said she talked the receiver into taking part, but we have to deliver to another location, middle of downtown Richmond. What is the rate? The broker asked. This person called and gave rate, which she rejected and said she'll pay $75. Take it or leave it. If we don't deliver, she will place claim against us. What is the point of asking a rate if you don't already know what you are paying and what brokers want us to communicate or charge back if we don't? What about them? And apparently the broker was Armstrong Transport Group. So this is something... This is something that people don't really address. So you have claims and you have carriers who take freight hostage and you have brokers who act like a-holes. It happens all the time, unfortunately. It's something that'll most likely continue to happen all the time. And there's not much you can do about it. But let's kind of try to break down the situation. The carrier did something wrong in the first place. If they knew they were overweight, they shouldn't have run. They should have waited at the shipper until it gets refused. But in the case of produce, and I don't have a lot of experience in produce, guys, anyone who watches this show religiously understands that I don't do much brokerage at all. Never did it as a carrier. And I moved probably probably four loads in my 10 plus years of being a broker. That went on a reefer. I just don't do reefer freight. It's just never been my thing. Don't know it. Don't want to know it. I'm happy doing what I do. But so I know, refusals and all that stuff happen quite a bit. But the problem that this carrier faces, one, they took an oversized load, overweight load. Regardless of the situation, that's just a bad step. But then they went above and beyond and they went and delivered the entire load without getting any violations along the way, which is pretty darn impressive, especially in Virginia. So they get to Virginia and then the after waiting 4 hours, the receiver only takes half of their stuff. So what do you do at that point? I've had that happen to me where I go and, like, for example, I had sugar big pallets of sugar, 2,000 pounds each. One of the pallets tipped over, whatever. So they tried to refuse the pallet. But of course, they tried to refuse the pallet for damages, but accept the pallet. I learned very quick in my transportation experience and owning trucks and all that stuff that if someone marks something as damaged, it stays on my truck. And I always did that. And it worked better for me because I was local. So my trucks were always coming back to my terminal every day. We never did, you know, pick and runs ever. Very rarely. I got to say very rarely. But the majority of the time, we transloaded everything in our warehouse anyway. So a lot of when we had damage, I took the freight. I used to have cases of gum and everything in the office, and I just pay out the claim, you know, in cash. But sugar is expensive. They tried to claim like $3,500. I didn't want to pay $3,500 when I had the sugar perfect. So what can you do in this instance? Because Franz is saying on YouTube, produce has a lot of claims. If they don't bring produce on time, the receiver sometimes rejects the entire load. I get that. That's why I don't touch produce stuff. A lot of people do. I just don't touch produce for that reason because it's claim ridden. If something happens, a trailer breaks down, it's just there's too many ifs about moving produce. But I'm more focusing on the part where his delivery was reassigned. And it unfortunately, the original post doesn't say how far from the new delivery location he was. So it doesn't say if it was 5 miles away and that's why they're paying $75 or if it was 200 miles away and then it's really wrong. They're paying, you know, $75. And I can tell you with probably 100% certainty, now I'll say 95% certainty that that broker is making more than $75 for a re-delivery charge. Because and most likely if the broker has dealt with that shipper and that receiver before, this is not the first time it happened. But what are the rights that the carrier has? I mean, that's something that everybody's sitting here wanting to know. Can you hold freight hostage for payment? Yeah, but it's not really going to do you any good. Me as a carrier or me as a broker, I've called insurance companies and said, hey, this carrier's filing or this carrier's holding my freight hostage. I'm going to pay him, but I also want to do a claim. You know, and have been successful in getting the carrier to go and deliver. I also, as a carrier, have held freight hostage for payment. The hostage is not a good thing. The guy owed me a lot of money. I made all my deliveries under the promise that I was getting paid, except I didn't get paid. And he got me twice. The third time he sent a truck to my warehouse on accident, I offloaded everything. And then when he wanted to go send a different truck in to pick it up, I said, sure, once you pay me. Still technically the same thing. He called my insurance and all that stuff. Franz asked on YouTube, would I recommend the driver call the shipper directly? It's not going to do any good to call the shipper directly because the shipper isn't, you don't know who the customer is a lot on these, a lot of these loads. It could be a third party that is, you know, a blind load that's buying and selling the stuff and nobody knows who anybody is. In all reality, your only recourse is to deal with the broker, unfortunately, but there is no reason why you have to settle at $75. Because you, the freight's on your truck. I mean, this is my rationale is I would say, nope. Depending on the situation and depending on how far that the rate is $750. And I don't need you to do it, to agree to it. That is the redelivery, especially if you have that set in your rate column, like I always say. Make sure you have all your information on the rate confirmation. So if you have to redeliver, your fees on there. If you encounter detention, your detention policy is on there because there's no mention of detention at the shipper or the receiver for this carrier. It just said about wait times, but it didn't say whether it was prearranged or detention was approved or anything like that. So what do you do? Like what are you supposed to do? Me personally, I would if I was that carrier, I would just go make my delivery. And I would bill the customer who is a broker. I'd bill him for the total amount, whatever amount I think I'm doing, not some outrageous amount. You know, if it's 100 miles away and I ended up spending 10 hours out of my day or lost a whole day doing this, my truck makes $800 a day. I get $800, whatever. So I'm going to add $800 to the invoice. And when the broker doesn't pay, which he will not, then I send it to collections And then when they, you know, they refute the collections, you keep it going and then you sue them. And then guess what happens? You spent $35 on a little lawsuit and they will pay, especially if they're in the wrong. Or you call corporate. If it's an agent, then most likely corporate doesn't want any bad press. Refusing or like when they said, here's the thing is you can't dispose of freight either. You can after a certain amount of time, but you can't just, you know, dispose of it. You have to store it and then you can charge storage. So like, here's another thing. If you have a warehouse that can handle refrigerated stuff, go offload it in your warehouse and wait till they agree to pay you. You're not holding the freight hostage. You're just saying, hey, I'm not going to go redeliver it for $75. And you're certainly not going to open a claim because I finished my delivery. My delivery was done. They wouldn't have grounds for a claim at that point anyway. If they're trying to have it redelivered, they have to pay for it. Now, I know a lot of brokers don't do that. You know, they pay whatever they can. But the fault doesn't lie necessarily with, well, it does. The fault lies with the broker because the broker should go back to their customer and say, hey, I am not paying a driver $75 for 10 hours. That's it. You got to pay more. I don't care if I lose you as a customer. You have to pay more or I eat it as a cost because brokers, like I said in the beginning of this video, brokers need to understand what it's like to be a carrier. So if a broker is sitting there going, oh, well, you just sat there. You were playing on your tablet watching Netflix. Who cares? You're sitting in the truck. Brokers need to understand what it's like to sit there for hours. Brokers need to understand what it's like to have to cancel loads because you decided that it has to redeliver somewhere else. Brokers all have to realize that, you know, and so I guess it wasn't that long of a talking point. I thought it would be longer. So I don't know if our phone's working, but I will throw up that number. The number is 914-803-4008. You're welcome to call in if you have any input you would like to talk about. Talk about weather and horrible traffic, whatever. It's fair game. Armando Ritchie on Facebook said, lack of communication on the broker, I believe. Well, definitely, because the carrier tried to call the broker several times. And was unable to get in touch with him. So that is definitely a lack of communication on the broker. But nonetheless, it still doesn't make it any better. It doesn't make the carrier any better. It doesn't make him, you know, whole, I guess, you know, the thing that bothers me is that if you're out there and you have your own authority and you're running and you're making money and you're doing all that stuff and you're willing to take the gamble of shit, like, darn it, there's the explicit filter, stuff like this happening, then you should already know what you're going to do. It shouldn't be a question that you post on Facebook. In my opinion, I could be wrong. And that may be, you know, bad because then, you know, people are like, well, you don't give anyone a chance if you don't allow new people to get started in the industry. Well, I think the only people that should be working in the industry or owning trucks and being a broker and all that, the only people that should be doing that are people that are actually, that have a background in it, that people that have an understanding of what it's like to, you know, like I say, live in a truck, to book a load, to look at load boards and all that. You know, there's a lot to it, but it's kind of sad, man. I've spent the past week just saying it's sad, so I'm going to stop saying that. Franz on YouTube said driving like 5 to 10 miles for $75 is good, but more than that, I would not move truck. I wouldn't move my truck in this instance either. I would tell the receiver to get the crap off my truck. Or flat out refuse it. Sign that it's refused. Call the broker and say, hey, listen, at that point, the shipper or the freight broker removed or refused my load. I'm going to bring it over to this place unless you give me a new location. And I, by the way, I charge this to redeliver. The broker doesn't have any footing to say, oh, no, I'm only paying you $75. You say, all right, well, I'm not moving my truck. You want to call the insurance? I'll call them first. That's it. It's not your job to redeliver. You followed your contract from point A to point B. That's what it says in your contract. Unless your contract says, hey, you were late to delivery or whatever. And then you're kind of screwed. But Franz on YouTube said 2020 rates are still off to a bad start. What do you think? Yeah, except reefer, ironically. Flatbed rates too are a little bit up. But reefer rates are still running strong. Or they were as of, you know, January. So I don't know. I mean, rates are going to come up. They're bad this time every single year. So, you know, The rate question, you were probably just getting me to say it because I said I was last video. I said I was tired of saying the same thing about it. But rates are going to come up. They're going to be low. February is going to be low. We're going to see some trucking closures. I guarantee, you know, I'll be reporting on some companies that are going to close. It's just going to happen. Unfortunately, it is going to happen. Trucking companies are going to close because rates are going to be low. But yeah, and here's the thing too. When I called in to Trucker's Coach on Friday night, you know, a lot of people are talking about this site called Lane Honey. I don't know anything about that site except that the rates I've seen on it are never accurate, ever. And so I was called into on a show because he wanted to see if freight brokers were feeling the effect. I think, Ryan, if you're watching this video, yeah, freight brokers are right now are feeling the effect. At least this guy is. You know, at least my company. For the shipping volume that my customer usually has is way down right now. And the rates that we do get are even lower than what they typically are. So it makes it a little bit harder for us to actually cover freight at a profit because we're pretty fair with what we try to pay our carriers. So, and at this point, we don't take losses on loads either. We just don't cover them. We just don't move them. We're not accepting them from the customer. And, you know, we're waiting. That's it. You know, just like carriers, we're still here sitting. I mean, granted, my operational costs besides payroll of, you know, $2,500 or $2,800 every 2 weeks, whatever it is, I don't really have a huge, huge, you know, bill. I don't have assets. I have anything really. I've got my phone system and load boards and all that crap, but that's it. I don't have a truck. I don't have fuel. I don't have, you know, driver pay. My wife makes money. I make money doing off of all the other things. So we're able to stay open. We're able to tolerate a downturn in freight. Sort of. But then again, figure 6 to 8 weeks from now, the freight's going to start coming back. Rates are going to start coming up. Shippers are going to start shipping stuff again. Especially, well, depending on what this coronavirus does out there, but you know, the market should pick up a little bit. You know, I mean, the only thing I can do is project. I think it's going to. Last year it did, and it didn't come way back up, but it stayed low for quite a while. But every January and every February, rates go down. It's kind of something that we all have to expect. The problem is that we didn't see great rates last year, and that's why it's a bigger concern for everybody, which makes sense, right? All right, so... So I've got some news in terms of, and some of you guys may have seen it. Let me see if I put this here, and I didn't. I tried to get it before. So on my Facebook page, Freight Broker Live, you may have seen I opened up another training group session, whatever, for next month or starting next week. I had probably, I don't know, 10 or so people asked me when I was start doing another training and all that stuff. I've entertained doing one and then I've not entertained it. And just because, I mean, here's the thing. I don't even know where to go with it. So here's the issue I have with training programs, and including mine, is you can never fully train someone how to do the job in a weekend, in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, 6 weeks even. You can't do it. So what I have decided to do and to try to combat that is kind of make the no bullshit tour, you know, I guess. And that's what this is. I will teach you what I know about brokering freight. I will teach you what I know about being a salesperson. I will teach you what I know about being a carrier, because again, just like I've said several times in this video and pretty much every other video, you cannot be a good broker, in my opinion, unless you understand the truck driver and the mindset of a truck driver. So unlike the previous trainings that I've done, you're not going to just become an agent after. It doesn't work that way. And I found that people have an unrealistic expectation, even going through my trainings where I'm a very, you know, excuse the term, but dead ass. Like I'm honest. You know what I mean? So I tell the truth. So when I'm having a freight broker training and I am trying to train someone on how to do something, I'm trying to deter them from entering the business, especially if they're super green and have no real knowledge of the industry. But people still want to learn. And that's the thing, is I don't want to harp on it. So I've partnered with a couple of people, and we are going to essentially teach a course, and you could sign up. It starts next, whatever, Tuesday or Wednesday, whenever it is, at 11. So I meet 11 o'clock in the morning on Eastern times once a week. And then the second day it meets 2 o'clock, or I'm sorry, it meets 6 o'clock Eastern time, PM, on Thursday nights. And the reason I did that is if people have to miss the morning one, then they could catch up with the night one. But I'm only excusing two unless you actually talk to me. I will be keeping attendance and all that stuff. It's a 6-week program where I'm going to teach you what I think are the fundamental aspects of being a freight broker, from history of brokering, because you need to know it. You need to know the history of logistics. You need to know regulations and current trends and things that are affecting the industry, just like we talk about here every day. And then I'll get into the actual brokerage side, because to be honest, to teach someone how to broker, it takes like 3 hours to teach a fundamental. The hardest part about being a broker is the sales side. And the sales isn't just, you know, dealing with shippers. It's also dealing with carriers and dealing with and the customer relationships that you have to have for both parties.
Damn it.
Phone. But it's dealing with both of those people, or both of those groups of people together. So I've decided that, okay, myself and a couple other people that I'm partnering with, we are going to teach essentially a no bullshit freight broker course. We are going to tell you that, hey, you are not going to be ready to open your own brokerage. We're going to lay the groundwork for you to entertain, to take the next step, to take another course, to make a business plan, to do whatever. We're going to teach you about the industry with the pure guidance that you may not be ready. Now, there's some people out there that already have it, or there's other people, like a couple in my last training group, that they just picked it up quick as shit. So those people in that group, I will offer an agent opportunity to them. But it's not, you know, in the previous groups, I'm like, oh, take the course and I'll teach you everything and then you become a broker. And as of, you know, 14 people that all did it, I have 3 or 4 that are actively moving freight every single day. I have another 2 or 3 that aren't really doing anything, but still just want to be a part of it. And then I have the rest that just said, oh, it's not for me. I can't do it. I'm not making any money. Well, ultimately, being a broker, if you're not good at it, you're not going to make any money. So for anyone that wants to sign up with that, go to the Facebook page, find the post that I put. I already had 3 or 4 people sign up. Like I said, I'm not keeping a lot of people. It's more of myself. First 3 weeks, what I'm going to do is try to scare the shit out of you and have you not want to continue on. If you decide, hey, this isn't for me, I'm not going to be able to do this, it's going to cost too much money, or it's not for me, I'm not an outgoing person, then I'm going to refund, you know, $150 of the $200 that I'm charging, or something like that. And that's for the first 3 weeks, because I want people to honestly take a look and say, hey, do I want to deal with this? But you can find out more on it if you go to freightbrokerlive.com/become-agent, or just go to the Facebook page and you can find the link. I didn't copy the link to put in the chat. Or if you wait like an hour after this, I will just, you know, have it say freightbrokerlive/training or something like that. But you know, it's good for those that have some understanding of the industry and are really trying to figure out whether or not it's for them. You know, I've trained a lot of people that have gone to other freight broker schools and other freight broker training programs and other weekend warrior programs and stuff. And some of them do have, you know, a little bit of knowledge. They don't have enough to actually go out and do it, but I can build off of that. And the good part about doing what I do so long is that I've done this for a very long time. I've encountered those programs. I know how to build off of them, the weekend boot camps and all that, to give you a foundation that you may be able to build off of with the right, you know, steps. And that's kind of what I do, you know, is I'll fill in those gaps. You guys know from the shows, I'm not a big schedule person. I'm not a big format person. I'm someone that sits there and goes, I am going to, you know, figure out what you guys need. And that's where I'm going to run with it. So it starts next Tuesday. Like I said, I'm only taking 10 or 15 people total. And I don't know when I'm doing a next one. I kind of just throw it up when I want to and when I have time after the 3rd week. So I'm going to go through most of the history and the carrier side. So I'm going to talk about, you know, the carrier side, you know, what it's like to go over a truck. You have to understand hours of service if you're a freight broker. I know a lot of freight brokers don't, but you do. You have to understand the ELD mandates and what you can and can't tell a carrier to do. You have to understand claims and all those things. So I'm going to spend, you know, essentially the first 3 weeks talking about the operational aspect of being a carrier, the operational aspect of being a broker. And then the final 3 weeks are going to be myself and another person. And we are going to talk about sales, because in the brokerage world, the hardest part is sales, is getting the customers. And then for the ones that choose that say, okay, I'm ready to become an agent, and that I also feel are ready to become agents, then I will work with you one-on-one and we'll establish some sort of plan to have you go down that run. But the people that do this, you're not getting a fancy certificate that says, oh, you're a certified freight broker. You're not getting any of that crap. You're not going to get a guaranteed job employment because you don't even know if you want to do it. I don't even know if I want you to do it. So, Michael, yeah, you can PM me. Hernando on Facebook, you said, I sent you a PM on that, by the way. All right, I'll check after. Oh, I think I saw it right before. Yeah, I don't know when I'm doing the next one. Like I said, I kind of just plop them up when I have time and when I think there's a little lull, and there's a little lull in freight. So what better time to try to get people to learn the business? And the way I'm doing it is like, I have another guy that I know he drives. He drives a truck at night. He has a local route. So I'm like, listen, you can make the morning meetings. And then for the night meetings, we'll just, you know, I'll record them and make them available to you. Excuse me. And I'll track him to make sure he's actually watching the videos. Because if you sign up and you don't attend, I'm going to kick you out. And at any point, if I kick you out, I refund your $150 anyway. So even if you're 6 weeks in and then you just tick me off or you ask stupid questions, you're not getting it. That's the thing, is I want people to understand that this is not like, this industry is fun and lucrative and you can make a lot of money, but it's difficult sometimes. You know what I mean? It sucks. Like, for example, today, I know Ryan had a load cancel. I've answered a bunch of calls, and as soon as I give them the rates, they're like, oh my God, you're just like one of those bad guys. Well, of course. I mean, we have to be competitive with some of our rates. It's not like we can always just pay more than what other brokers are offering on the same load, because then we're not going to get the loads. It's the same thing of you guys. If you keep taking cheap ass loads, the loads are going to stay cheap forever. It's the same thing. If we try to quote higher and higher and higher, eventually we can hopefully get the carrier to go up. But if we can't get the carrier to raise the rates, or the customer to raise the rates, then we have to come down so that way we can still make money. So that's kind of the deal with it. But go to my Facebook page, sign up, because as soon as it's filled, or as soon as I get enough people, I'm just going to delete it like I always does. And then everyone's going to say, oh, when are you doing it again? I have no idea. I kind of just do them when I have time. Like I said, with this one, I'm partnering with somebody else because I think that he has some very good sales insight and will be able to really help me work on the prospecting side of things. Because even though I'm great at sales, I'm not the best prospector, because the way I do it doesn't necessarily work for everybody else. I'm not a cold caller. I'm not someone that's going to sit on the phone and read off a script. I do a lot of background first before I try to go after customers. That's just the way I've always done things. But with that said, I think I'm just going to end the show. So you can go to the Facebook page, freightbrokerlive.com, and you can find the link for that. I think I've already had 4 or 5 people sign up this morning. I think when I get 10 or 15, I'm just going to cancel the rest, because I don't want too many people. It's too hard to do. Hernando on Facebook said, if I can't make this one, I guess I'll just have to wait for the next one whenever that is, but definitely keep watching your videos. And yeah, I mean, that's all kind of separate from these videos. It's more of a way, for one, I make a little extra money. Two, the people that are out there that don't necessarily have the experience, if I see that you get it and I see that you're making, you know, sense of the industry and that you just need that the platform to do it, and I feel that you're going to be successful, then absolutely, I'm going to make you an agent. you know, because I'm going to make money off it as well. But this is more of to give a complete immersion into the industry for, so people can even decide whether they want to mess with it or not. Because you could take some weekend warrior course and they're going to be like, hey, man, you can make a lot. Yeah, I made six figures last year. Oh, I made high six figures. I made $250,000. That's what my tax return says. And I don't know where the hell the money went. You know, that like that's what people that's what happens in the industry. So I want to be honest and talk about the good and bad, because I don't think anyone else does that. And I think it will help me, you know, stay honest and let people understand what the deal is. But with that said, if you've never seen my show before, please make sure you like, subscribe on YouTube, on Facebook, like and follow. I go live at 2 o'clock every single day. I don't normally spend 15 minutes talking about some training program. I normally spend the entire show ripping on someone else's, because the training programs are they're a dime a dozen, unfortunately. And my goal, and that's why I do the refunds and all that stuff, because with my goal is to try to, I don't know what my goal is. I don't even know why I do this shit, to be honest. It costs me more money than I make to make these videos, to do all the content and all that stuff. But the reason I do it, and I do know, is because one, it makes me feel good to try to help people in the industry. And the second thing is because people need it. Where else are you going to learn? You know, new brokers aren't going to be hiring in the next 6 weeks or so, because freight's going to be down. So this gives you the time to say, hey, listen, I got it. You can walk into an interview and say, yeah, I've got no broker experience, but this is what I know. And this is what I know. And they'll say, well, how would you quote this shipment? And you're going to say, well, this guy, Steve, who makes these stupid, crazy videos online, well, he said I should do it this way. And you know what the broker is going to say, especially in the mega broker? He's going to say, wow, you really know a thorough way to quote, but now you have to add a higher margin because I've heard of that guy, Steve, and he doesn't charge the customer enough or he pays the carrier too much or something, because that's the kind of reputation I have in that. But Hernando on Facebook. Yeah, that's pretty much it. It's my way of trying to make the next bit of people that are jumping into the industry take pride in what they do, I guess, and understand it and be ready to try to help people and, you know, hopefully, you know, like I know there's other people that get pissed off. If I teach someone well enough that they feel confident that they can go and try to pass on what I know or what they now know to somebody else, I have no problem with that. I know a lot of other people are like, oh, they took my course, they worked for a year and then they went and now they're doing their own thing. Good for them. As long as they're doing it right, as long as they're teaching the people the right way. As long as you're not, you know, encouraging people, you know, to commit fraud and lie and steal and do pyramid schemes and all those other things that a lot of these other companies out there do, go for it, you know. But I'll be honest, it's not, I don't really like doing the courses because they take a lot of time for me. And a lot of people just don't care. So don't sign up unless you're very serious that you want to. You want to learn? I've got 6 weeks free pretty much until I go to Mets or Matt. Yeah, Matt's. And I'll see everyone that wants to go to Matt's. I'll see you all there too. But make sure you like, subscribe, and follow. And we'll go from there. All right. Make sure you guys download this on iTunes after and then leave me an awesome review so I can rank high again. See you later. Bye.